Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It may be Tuesday to you, but for all in the world, it feels like Monday to me. It is actually the 22nd day of March, 2011. We are well underway with war number 3. Welcome to Empire, as we like to say in the... Well, I like to say, not we in these parts. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about there. But no, really. Welcome to Empire. Wow, where did all my compression go? There we go. Okay, I think we've got another piece of equipment on the way to dropping dead. Ah, much better. There we go. Adjustments on the fly. You'll have that. No, it feels like Tuesday. It feels like Monday to me, but it's actually Tuesday because yesterday was Monday and we had the Dr. Bill chat. I hope you were able to avail yourselves of that. I can't tell you how important I view those chats, those American history chats with Dr. Bill to be. Now, bear in mind, of course, that yes, there are some issues related to how that particular the classwork goes, and that's discussed as well. But when Dr. Bill and Keith Lilly get into the meat of American history, you're not going to hear it's like many other places, if anywhere. Because it's just an honest, open, candid discussion of how this country came into being. And it's going to go forward. You see, by summer, we'll be talking about the Civil War. And wow, what a... And the run-up to the Civil War, that's all going to be nothing short of amazing. So those chats will be taking place on just about a monthly basis between now and late June, early July. And I hope you'll be there for every one of them, because they are, in fact, so important. I have proof of how important they are. And I think I think we should probably put that at the top of the list. There's another thing. There's other things that could easily go to the top of the list this evening. Like I said, you know, congratulations. Welcome to war number 3. Hope you're enjoying it. And let me be clear about this. I was critical of this kind of crap when George W. Bush did it. And I'm not going to change my position because a guy in what is titularly, although more and more often not, but titularly my party is doing it. Right is right and wrong is wrong, and what is going on in Libya is wrong. And no, we're not just going to fly around in the sky. We're going to bomb a lot of stuff on the ground. And you know what? I do have a certain degree of sympathy for so-called enemy soldiers. When the choice is serve in the military or we kill you, how many of us say that we are made of the stern moral stuff whereby we would be able to say, well, kill me, you know, don't kill me later, Muammar, kill me now. I just don't think they're... No, we're all Daffy Duck. He does not have to shoot me later. He can shoot me now. No. We're not like that. So, welcome to war. Ain't it grand? I had some cost estimates from our buddy Jim. And I'm looking for him right now because I think these are actually rather, this is rather telling. No, it's really, really telling. I don't get the urgency of bombing the snot out of more brown people. Especially more brown people who have lots and lots of oil under... oh, God, there it is again. It's just... It doesn't work well for me. Sorry. There we go. No-fly costs of Libya? One cruise missile equals $1 million U.S. How many have we fired so far? Yeah, a lot. One aircraft carrier costs about $10,000 per hour to operate. And that seems actually like a conservative estimate. The additional Pentagon request, $780 billion U.S. over current allocation. Jim gives us all of this under the headline, Economic Conundrum. One cruise missile, $1 million U.S. One aircraft carrier, $10,000 per hour dollars U.S. Additional Pentagon request, $780 billion U.S. over current allocation. 58% of the American people want to cut the defense budget. 18% want to cut Social Security. Meanwhile, Trump rented land to Gaddafi and then told him to get out and kept the money and said on Fox, "That's right, I screwed him." Fox lies about correspondence being used as shields, according to Nick Robertson of CNN. And Jim just concludes by saying, go figure. And really, it's kind of where we are. Go figure. Meanwhile, what I said about Dr. Bill's chats being so important, I really do want to put some force and effect behind. And so consequently, we take you to the South Carolina West, apparently. You know, there was no Arizona the first time some disaffected, highly dysfunctional states decided to leave the Union. There was no Arizona until what, 1912, I think? I remember Fancy telling me, 1912? But not to be outdone, Arizona is fast-tracking its crazier-than-South-Carolina status. Now, bear in mind, the creep that you're about to hear from, named Russell Pierce, is the president. Are you ready? Yeah, is the president of the State Senate of Arizona. He's also a Nazi. No, really. No, I'm not saying, you know, that guy's such a Nazi. No. He's a Nazi. You know, hobnobs with Nazis, hangs out with skinheads. Probably can sing the Panzerlied in the original German. A Nazi. Yeah, that kind. So. many thanks to the good work that Think Progress does for getting this kind of stuff out there so that folks like me, folks like I, what would that be, can talk about it. Because God knows Cutesy Couric isn't going to, and Lord knows Brian Williams isn't going to, and Morning Joe isn't going to, as he stares enviously down the front of Mika Brzezinski's top. Jesus, he's like a 5-year-old. But at least we can talk about this, and thanks, like I said, to Think Progress for highlighting it. So, State Senate President Russell Pierce of Arizona appears at an Oceanside Tea Party rally. Now, Pierce, I don't know what he is, birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, but this appears to be tentherism. Hell, I didn't even know there was an Oceanside, Arizona. Go figure. And speaking to this teabagging rally in the not-too-distant past, Russell Pierce of Arizona did everything. And again, remember, this isn't just some the crazy asshole at the end of the bar. This is the president of the Senate of Arizona making this declaration. Talking to the teabaggers. Here we go. Now, this, and remember, the reason for running this is because this is what makes what Dr. Bill is doing and allowing us to carry so vitally important. Just saying.
Now, this history, most of us went around when the Constitution was written. But you remember, we kind of existed before Congress, the states. We created the Congress. We created the federal government by compact. You know you're not a citizen of the United States. You're a citizen of a sovereign state. The 50 sovereign states make up the United States. We're citizens of those sovereign states. It is not a delegated authority. It is an inherent authority that the states have over the federal government. It's about time somebody gets it right.
Except not you, Russell, Sieg Heil. Did you get that? Birther, Deather, Tenther, Booger Eater Russell Pierce has declared that you are not a citizen of the United States. And of course, if you follow this down the twists and turns of that nasty, feces-filled little weasel hole that he lives in, you'll find out that since you're not a citizen of the United States, well, the several states can just declare who and is and is not a citizen, right? Ooh, that makes sense. There's only one little problem with what Russell Pierce is offering up.
Jesus.
These guys are getting to be as bad as the religious fundamentalists, and in about 9 times out of 10, they are interchangeable because religious fundamentalists are frequently teabaggers, birthers, tenthers, deathers, and booger eaters. Stupid is as stupid does. But he says that because the states pre-existed the Constitution, that if you weigh the same as a duck, you're not a citizen of the United States, and therefore a witch. Isn't that what he said? Mother. Mother. No, Mr. Spock? Logic officer? Somebody? Please? I mean, I've got the transcript of it right here. I heard it. You heard it. We created the Congress. We created the federal government by compact. Do you know what existed before the Congress? The states. You know you're not a citizen of the United States. You're a citizen of a sovereign state. The 50 sovereign states make up the United States of America. We're citizens of those sovereign states. It is not a delegated authority. It is an inherent authority that states have over the federal government. It's about time somebody gets it right. This is why what Dr. Bill is doing is so unutterably important. Because this guy, the right wing, are at the point where, I mean, and again, like I said, they're interchangeable with fundamentalists, and most of the stuff that the fundamentalists believe in is just made-up crap. And so there's a certain amount of carryover. That's a tax accounting term, isn't it? I don't know the... Yeah, there's a carryover. And so where American history is concerned, or politics, or philosophy, or knitting, you can just make crap up. Now remember, in addition to birthers, deathers, tenthers, and booger eaters, there are also fourteenthers, of which Russell Pierce is also one. Because in order for that insane babble that Russell Pierce, you heard him there, put forward. In order for that to work, there just can't be a 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment has to go bye-bye. Bye-bye. Because the 14th Amendment says this. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. That's one sentence. Let's see. That's one sentence and two commas. One sentence, two commas, and a period, and words. Words. I'm a little... I don't know. I guess I'm a little confused here. What about the 14th Amendment? Does Russell Pierce, Russell, not understand? And let's read that again. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. So if you're born or naturalized inside the United States, and let's say you're in Missouri, then you are, by definition, within the 14th Amendment, a citizen of the United States and of the state of Missouri. Let's say instead that you were born in, Bardstown, Kentucky. Well, then you're a citizen of the Commonwealth of Kentucky and the United States. But the United States comes first. You're a citizen of the United States and the Commonwealth of Kentucky. See, it works with Commonwealth, too. Isn't that nifty? The second sentence, though, is the one that must really make Russell Pierce's skin crawl. His white, white, pure white skin. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, semicolon, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, semicolon, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Those two clauses are defined as the due process clause and the equal protection clause. And they're really important. They were passed after the Civil War to make sure that recalcitrant, still licking their wounds, Southern knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing Confederate holdovers couldn't come up with a whole raft of laws to try to maintain the status quo antebellum, despite the fact that they got whooped. Unfortunately, a lot of those laws were passed, and because there were a lot of unreconstructed racists and bigots inside the federal government and inside the judicial system, it wasn't really enforced until we begin to come into the late 1940s and early 1950s with things like Brown versus Board of Education. Plessy versus Ferguson, among other things, was decided in the full light of the 14th Amendment. It only works if you want it to work. That's part of the Tinkerbell problem of the Constitution. The Constitution, and you would have heard a significant discussion of this last night if you were listening to Dr. Bill's lecture. The Constitution has something called a Supremacy Clause. And it says the Constitution of the United States of America shall be the supreme law of the land. And as Dr. Bill pointed out, the Supremacy Clause actually was championed by a guy from Maryland who despised the idea of a federal constitution. But when he saw which way the wind was blowing and which way the unseen finger was moving and having writ was about to move on, he went all in for the supremacy clause because the only other possibility was that the Congress would have some sort of a veto, and then everything would get sideways and nothing would work. It is so important. And I only say this because it's easy to look at American history or history in general and think of it as a parlor game, as, you know, the being able to answer trivia questions. It is anything but that. It is deadly important. Because absent, well, you know, what was it Georges Santayana said? Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. You'll notice he used the word doomed. Because most people who fail to learn history, instead of doing something new that's stupid, do something stupid that's been done before. As well as mean, spiteful, hurtful, dangerous, bloodthirsty, Pick a screw up, because again, to go back into that book that some people think is holy, it's worth remembering that the preacher in Ecclesiastes says there is nothing new under the sun. That means that everything we've screwed up before, and there is truth in that. The fact of the matter is, we are in the year 2011, a gnat's ass away from full-blown secessionism. Full-blown secessionism. I mean, paying attention to the content of what Russell Pierce said there, you do comprehend, I'm sure, that he really is on the verge of suggesting that Arizona has the right to leave the Union. And when I think of the thousands of people, the hundreds of thousands of people who died in the American Civil War, and how Abraham Lincoln said, "We hereby consecrate this, that it shall not, that there, that we hereby dedicate ourselves, consecrate ourselves, that their lives shall not have been lost in vain, and that we shall have a new birth of freedom." Then letting Russell Pierce get away with what Russell Pierce wants to do is literally to spit on the grave of every American who has given his or her life in that full measure, last full measure of devotion from that time to this. And I don't merely mean on traditional battlefields. I mean, three young people buried alive in an earthen dam in Mississippi. I mean Dr. King. I mean John Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy. And all those people who were not killed but had their lives forever altered in the Red Scare of the 50s. Because the American experience is an experience of attempting to expand and not contract freedom. And by that, with that understanding, you can take a long view of what happened this past Saturday and Sunday as well. There was no one gathered together in Washington, D.C. who labored under the misapprehension that any war was going to end because of anything that was being done that day. it's going to... war is the perpetual business of empire. And more, especially as I watched what unfolded on Saturday, I didn't get to see Sunday because I had to come home. It's empire. And maybe you all say, well, yeah, Bob! But when you see it in its unmasked glory, or horror, more appropriately, it feels somewhat more revelatory. To see the shock troops of empire gathered about peaceful protesters, is disturbing to say the least. And remember, I had something against which, in a fairly recent vintage, I had something against which to measure this. Namely, I was there on September the 27th in the very same location for Appalachia Rising. We had considerably more people than were there on Saturday. It's not a contest. I'm not comparing. I'm just saying. But even with more people there, we were free to move about on what used to be Pennsylvania Avenue and is now the no human zone, the DMZ in front of the White House. Now, what happens? What happens, and this is purely mechanical, or logistic, perhaps is the better word. What happens in these situations is that you explain to the authorities that there's going to be a protest and there's going to be some civil disobedience. So in turn, the authorities, and this is kind of like a magician telling how he does his tricks, but when you are doing this in empire, then it becomes a very stylized thing. It's the difference between, say, the naturalist theater of Eugene O'Neill, in which everything is really kind of rough and gritty and real, and freaking opera. Eugene O'Neill, realism. Opera, stylized. The movements are very... Kabuki theater, the same way. You move a certain way, and the movement conveys a certain impression or emotion. You have stylized players of parts. In the theater of Molière, there was always an ingénue. Well, the same thing happens with things like this in empire. So you tell the authorities that you want to have a protest and you're going to do some civil disobedience. And you get your permit. And that means that once they know how many people are going to civilly disobey, they bring up a certain number of buses. And they set up their remote arrest unit. And so once everybody's in place to go and get arrested, then they put up a portable barrier around the arrestees. They did that with Appalachia Rising, and yet people could still move about and journalists could get in and take pictures and so forth and capture it all. But by the time this past Saturday rolled around, I guess they had changed tactics. Because everyone was cordoned back into Lafayette Park. You couldn't get out into the no man's land, because to set foot on what used to be Pennsylvania Avenue was to be immediately arrested. They literally brought out the cavalry, park police on horseback. You can think of them as park police on horseback if you wish, but they were cavalry. And six people on horseback can cause absolute disaster inside a group of 500 or 1,000 or 1,500 people. You do remember what happened when they rode the camels into the crowd in Egypt, right? Yeah. Cavalry. That's why it's effective. Because from a superior position and a 1,500-pound animal, you can raise absolute hell inside a group of people who are on their feet and not mounted. And the reason they set up that barrier is they don't want people bouncing back and in, you know, I wasn't supposed to get arrested, I want to get arrested, oh, you arrested, I want to get arrested again. No. Once you've made up your mind, you're in there, and it becomes, because again, we're talking about a stylized process, it becomes more orderly. And because everybody was nonviolent, you just pick them up, there was still an air of brutality about it. Because at the end of the day, it is a brutal process. They didn't use metal handcuffs. They used the little plastic zip cuffs. And they made sure they put them on nice and tight so they bite into the skin real good. And then they began the slow process of taking each person up, putting them in the bus, processing, print, picture, into the bus, sit on the bus, and then once one bus is full, it goes off to the processing center, which is over across the Anacostia River on Mars for all intents and purposes. And that's what I witnessed going on Saturday. A stylized process in which people express themselves, and that is the cornerstone of it, personal expression within the boundaries of the First Amendment, and in which they are then summarily dealt with and turned loose. It is laughingly referred to as catch and release, kind of like trout fishing. Now, are there problems within all of this? Absolutely. And I think, by comparison, I can point out a couple. One, the right of the people peaceably to assemble, the right of the people to petition their government for redress of grievances, shall not be abridged. Well, what you have any time there is civil disobedience in front of the White House is an abridgment of that process. But the court systems, remember, all court systems where all criminal cases are concerned are designed to on the 3M process. Protect the money, manage the morons, and punish the mean ones. And everything is done via that process. Well, okay, Jim, that makes sense. Anacostia is rough territory, says Jim. Crack alley. Kind of makes sense why they'd put the park police processing in operations, central operations command or whatever, over there. My task, by the way, and it was a self-appointed one. Mike Malloy had, of course, flown to D.C. from Atlanta. And I drove. So my purpose was to try to document some of it, and I did. I'm still figuring out how all this newfangled technology works, but by the end of the day, I'd figured out how to orient my phone in the right direction so everything wasn't freaking sideways. And make the most of the technology I had available to me. It was really silly. You want to know? Okay, so I had a 4G phone from Sprint, and I had the iPhone. for precisely this reason. These are tools. These are what we use with the horn. I use the 4G phone from Sprint as a mobile hotspot and then transmitted the 4G to the wireless of AT&T because AT&T is a bunch of fascist corporate pricks when it comes to metering their bandwidth usage. So by using Wi-Fi, I had unlimited bandwidth, whereas it would have cost a lot more. Wow, is that boring. But we did get some good video out. And then afterward, when it was over, I jumped in the car, and you've probably heard of her if you were a Malloy listener, and most of the Horn family are. Pterodactyl was there from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. And so she jumped in the car with me, and we drove over to make sure, because, like I said, that processing center is way the hell and gone. And when you get turned loose after your catch and release, well, where they release you is right outside the gates of where they took you in. Try getting a cab. You ain't gonna. I think Jim could probably confirm that. So my purpose was to be there and get Mike back to the hotel afterward and sort of debrief and so forth. And that's what I did. Now, I said we could maybe understand a little bit more of this stylized process by a comparison and contrast. And that's what this part is. Hold on. Much better. I hate for you to hear the sound of me slurping away at the lemonade jug. Do you remember, and I'm sure you do, the Supreme Court decision of a couple of weeks back in which the Supreme Court of the United States held that the religion industry has an absolute First Amendment right to peacefully protest anywhere on public property that it wishes, and it shall not be interfered with? I do. And you will recall that ruling had to do with the fact that the just mercenary abusers of the legal system, Margie Phelps, her daddy Fred, and that filthy little semi-incestuous gang of theirs, the case said that, you know, they can go and torment a family as it lays to rest its beloved child who has died on one of our horror-laden, unnecessary, misanthropic battlefields. And one of the central things that was observed in that ruling was that the Westboro Baptist people with their signs, God, you know, thank God for dead soldiers, God hates fags, you know, vile, hateful, filthy, monstrous speech, that they were absolutely protected because they were being peaceful, that they were not in any wise breaking the law. And that therefore they must be allowed to torment that family. Remember? Contrast that with what went on this Saturday in D.C. Naturally, during the rally portion of the event, there was a lot of speechifying. Mike Malloy speechified. Mike Ferner speechified. Medea Benjamin speechified. A number of veterans of various and sundry foreign engagements of the United States speechified. Jane Hampshire didn't speechify, but she stood off to the side. Came wandering up after a while. More on that later. And amplification systems were used so that you could be easily heard over the murmur of the crowd. And no one said a thing about it. Now, there were cops on horseback and cops on hoof, on foot all around, but no one made any attempt to interfere. There were some morons off to one side with great big American flags, and a sign. Oh, I love this one so much. Safe since 9/11. That's kind of like a horse holding a sign saying, safe since barn burnt down. But that was what that scenario was. And it was noisy and a little bit rambunctious, utterly nonviolent. But a lot of good energy there. The Code Pink ladies provided some wonderful singing. And it was after all of that happened that we then peacefully marched, and I did take part in the march, marched around the block and came back and disassembled. And then those who had decided to risk arrest, in other words, be arrested, gathered in one place, at which time, again, as part of this stylized process, the park police informed them that they were illegally gathered on property owned by the people of the United States and were ordered to disperse. Like Peter denying Christ, they do that about three times and then they move in, and after they're sure that everybody's there who wants to be arrested and nobody's there who doesn't want to be arrested, they move in and start the process. The buses run on clean natural gas. If it had said anything about clean coal, I probably would have been arrested too, but it wouldn't have been for civil disobedience. I would have been putting windows out. And I didn't have no bail money. But that's the process. So compare the two. Now, I want you to understand something. The noisy, you know, protest rally part is over. Now, back behind the barricade, there's still a lot of people chanting, and they're chanting the things you usually chant at an anti-war protest. They're not getting arrested. The people who are sitting in silence, Malloy among them, Daniel Ellsberg, Colonel Ann Wright, veterans, the people who are sitting in silence, and lest I put too fine, at the risk of putting too fine a point on it, behaving exactly as the members of the Westboro Baptist Church behave, are then arrested in the process that I've already described. What? And this is not necessarily an essay question or anything, but what's the difference? What is the difference between the hate-filled Westboro Baptist Church standing on a public sidewalk, impeding public progress along that sidewalk, and patriotic Americans who hate having our reputation, our flag, our national honor and integrity dragged through the filth for George Bush's foreign wars, which have now become Barack Obama's foreign wars, and now Barack Obama has a brand shiny new war of his own. I don't know. Maybe when you're president, and since they've all been men, maybe when you get your own first brand new spanking shiny war, I don't know, maybe it just gives you a big old presidential stiffy. I don't know. I can't imagine getting off on hoo-wee, we're going to drop some bombs on some brown people. But then again, I can't imagine putting M-80s up frogs' butts and getting off on that either. And we just got done having a guy in the White House for 8 years who did. Go figure. But what is the difference between a significant group of people manifesting nothing but pure, unmitigated hate, and the fact that they must be left alone, not dispersed, not arrested, and certainly not sued for the harm that they do? What is the difference between them and the people on Saturday who were marking the anniversary of a horrible, horrible, tragic, blood-sodden mistake? What is the difference? In a moment, I'll open the phone lines and you can give me your suggestions. But I would suggest to you that the difference lies in the fact that everybody involved knows that there are very few people who are going to adopt the thinking and the worldview of the Westboro Baptist Church. On the other hand, especially where Afghanistan is concerned, a growing majority of the people of the United States already adopt the worldview of the people who were assembled and waiting to be arrested in Washington, D.C. And that makes what was going on in Washington, D.C. dangerous. Not dangerous to you, not dangerous to me, but certainly dangerous to General Dynamics and GE and Boeing and the vast arrayed commercial power of the military-industrial-congressional complex and the military-industrial-intelligence complex, and therefore there is a different set of rules. Secondarily, it is also proof of my long-standing thesis that the First Amendment has become little more than a life support system for the religion industry, and in particular a specific form of the religion industry, the fundamentalist religion industry. Because remember, when a true Christian, someone like, say, for instance, Jim Wallis, protests in front of the White House, they haul his ass off to Anacostia, too. But, and here's the big but, when is the last time, and you know what, they've been to D.C., I'm pretty damn sure, maybe I certainly am willing to stand corrected if it's not true. When the Westboro Baptist thugs go to D.C., not a thing is done to them. Now, you square that up, because I can't, except to say, as I did, that they are no threat to the GEs and General Dynamics and Boeings and so forth of the world. And that's just sad. Not sad that they're no threat, but sad that that is the standard. Now, with regard to the charges that were levied against the protesters, there were two. Not one, but two. The first charge was trespassing. And they were trespassing by standing or sitting on the sidewalk at the fence in front of the White House, where the President of the United States was not even at the time in residence. That was charge one. Charge two is refusal to obey a lawful order. And that one is the one that is far more troubling. Because, you know what, even I, liberal and anti-authoritarian that I am, can imagine a place for a trespass law in the federal code regarding federal monuments and federal parks, which all of that is designated as. Wish I could have done something about that preposition. It has a place. But that second one, failure to obey a lawful order. In order for failure to obey a lawful order to be a valid charge, then we all must be de facto members of some sort of paramilitary citizenship. You know, we started out talking about citizenship. That is a troubling statute. Failure to obey a lawful order. Think about that a little bit, because the first thing that comes to my mind is, what if there's a traffic cop and there's a situation, a wreck or some sort of a traffic snarl, and he's standing out there and directing traffic, and he's like, turn left, turn left, turn left, because I saw this happening Saturday, and that's what triggered this in my head. And you insist on going straight instead of doing what you've been ordered to do for the sake of the greater good of the public and the interest of the public in not having massive traffic snarls that contribute to the possibility of loss of life and limb. Well, as you go by ignoring the cop, he pulls out his little notebook and he writes down your tag number. And a few days later in the mail, you get a traffic ticket charging you with failure to obey a lawful order. Because that cop was empowered at that time to try to protect the public good from a nasty traffic situation. And after the fact, if you didn't get in a wreck when you went the wrong way, after the fact, you go down and you either contest it or you pay your fine and you go away. If you contest it, you will be rightfully convicted for failure to obey a lawful order. Because when you operate a motor vehicle, you engage in, you impliedly consent to certain things in order to enjoy the privilege of having a motor vehicle operator's license and driving around on the public roads. Because anybody who has ever seen traffic in certain corners of the globe knows that not having some sort of order in one's traffic scheme leads to a lot of problems. Hell, the United States. Road rage. Anybody? But the point is, that all takes place after the fact. In the instant situation, however, the charge of failure to obey a lawful order is at the very least the manifestation of an empire sadly and deeply in the grips of fascism. Do you remember a few years ago during the Bush administration when the Supreme Court decided, and it is still the law of the land, that you as a citizen no longer have the right not to identify yourself to the police? Because I do. Up until that decision, if a cop came along and you were minding your own business and the cop said, show me your ID, you could tell him to piss up a rope because he had no probable cause and you were minding your own business. And somebody did that. And under the guise of protecting America from terrorism and scary brown people, the Supreme Court of the United States decided that an American citizen no longer has the right to withhold his or her identity from the police upon even the most casual of requests. And while that may not seem like a lot, it is. It is a whole lot. Because that goes right to one's ability to be secure in one's person, property, papers, and effects. The very essence of the Fourth Amendment's prohibition of invasion of one's papers, unreasonable search and seizure of one's papers, goes back to the experiences of the Founding Fathers with British occupation during the Revolution. Pipers, please. Accent's all wrong there, by the way. Because the right to freedom of speech is the right to freedom of silence as well. Music is the silence between the notes as well as the notes themselves. And we live in 2011, current era, in a country in which your silence is no longer protected. Your speech is not very well protected either, but in many ways, it is the assault on silence that is much more disturbing to me. And that is where we are. Now, a couple of notes. One, I mentioned that I saw Jane Hampshire of Fire Dog Lake and, more importantly, the Bradley Manning Advocacy Fund come toddling up to the stage at the rally in D.C. What does this matter? Well, the second day, Sunday, at Quantico, Virginia, was about Bradley Manning. Michael Moore and Daniel Ellsberg, Michael Moore was not there, but Daniel Ellsberg was. He was arrested Saturday and he was arrested Sunday. They are behind the Bradley Manning Legal Defense Fund, and it is legitimate. And if you feel inclined to contribute to Bradley Manning's legal defense, you will hear no objection from me. Because he needs a zealous and competent defense. But hovering around the corners of the rally on Saturday was Jane Hampshire. Jane Hampshire did not speak. Jane Hampshire was not arrested, to the best of my knowledge. And she was not arrested on Sunday either, to the best of my knowledge. If she was, I want to be corrected. I want to be corrected in the worst way. But the minute I saw her, I thought of the Dodge that she has running right now, the Bradley Manning Advocacy Fund, and I suddenly felt just a little bit icky. Because I wondered if I, or the groups there, were in some wise being manipulated by her. Because remember, the Bradley Manning Advocacy Fund does not pay for Bradley Manning's legal defense. It pays money to individuals to advocate on Bradley Manning's behalf and throw parties on, you know, and you know, organize things on Bradley Manning's behalf. And that is disturbing. Because I would say that 99% or 99.9% of the people within the reach of my voice right now believe what they believe about the continued incarceration and the charging of Bradley Manning, because they have deeply, firmly held convictions about the wrongness of what is being done to the young man. I'm one of those people. And I will submit to you that if you feel that way, you need not be paid to feel that way. And you need not be leveraged in some money-making scheme by someone trying to gin up further traffic for a website. If I ever get to the point where I'm doing something like that, I will turn this microphone off and the lights will go out and we will be done. I don't have to be paid to say anything that I think. It does take money to run the horn, but that's because they won't give me the bandwidth for free, and the equipment wasn't free, and tires aren't free, and gasoline isn't free, and there's nobody out there making it possible except for you. But I see a big, big difference. I wasn't arrested. I didn't go planning to be arrested. I was trying to fulfill a journalistic role. But I'm very skeptical of anyone, who would raise money on the back of someone in as grave and dire circumstances as is Bradley Manning. And if you have to be paid to feel what you feel about Bradley Manning, there is something very, very, very wrong with you. But because of what she is doing, that taint is upon a great deal of this process. Because since she has announced that there is a Bradley Manning Advocacy Fund, then you never know any time that advocacy is done on his behalf whether or not she has had her very, very profit-motivated hands on it. And so it was that when I saw her out of my peripheral vision, something in my stomach just dropped. Because I realized that not only was Bradley Manning going to be used, but so too was every person of conscience and goodwill in that group. Whether, and again, let me make this very clear, whether they realized it or not. So just some reflections on what the last few days have entailed. I will tell you after now that this hour-long filibobster is completed, I'll update you on, fundraising stuff. I checked before showtime. We are exactly $1,000 away from our fundraising goal for the month. It would be very, very nice if we could go 3 months in the black, because we do have pressing bills. If you recall, we've gone a lot of months in which we did not make our fundraising goal, and that has kept put us in the red, and we're still catching up with a whole bunch of stuff. January and February made that a little bit more likely, but still, that's, you know, that's where we are. We are $1,000 away. That is, we are 100 $10 contributions. We are 100 $10 contributions away from making our March fundraising goal. And by God, if we could do that in the next couple of days and I could just shut up about contributions for the remainder of March, believe me, no one would be happier about it than I would. By the way, I should mention that I got to meet a couple of Horn listeners there. It was Sailor Chick is in the chat room right now, and she just very quietly tapped me on the Bob, and I turned around and wow, yes, that's always so much fun. I love getting an opportunity to meet the people who share their time, their precious time, with what we do here. So at any rate, that's where we stand in terms of fundraising. The big things are still coming. April the 9th, I believe it is. One of the people, of course, who spoke at the rally was Chris Hedges. And he's working on things, working on some stuff right now, as I understand it, relating to corporate America's poverty, the way that corporate America generates not only profit but poverty in this country. And he will be back in West Virginia. We will be having a lecture series, this one co-sponsored by Seneca 2, in addition to West Virginia Patriots for Peace and the West Virginia Citizens Action Group. And the Horn will bring you that live on April the 9th. I find that really, really exciting. And that's, you know, that's the kind of stuff, you know, getting down the mountain. That's the kind of stuff that you do help fund. Because this doesn't, you know, I wish it was else otherwise, but, you know, it isn't. It's just part of the bills that keep all of this going. By the way, you were not on the hook for the D.C. trip. That was all done independently of Horn contributions. Just wanted you to know. So there we are with the first hour of this program, and God knows there is a ton of other stuff. And whatever you want to bring to the table to discuss as well, you know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Email Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. We'll be right back with your calls, emails, and whatever else may strike our fancy. This is The Horn.
The sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. There was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to a song. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in a corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. There was a dry wind and it swept across across the desert and curled into the circle of blue. And the dead sand falling on the children, the mothers and the fathers and the automatic earth. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow mo. The way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in a corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. It's a turnaround jump shot, it's everybody jump start. It's every generation throws a hero up the pop charts. Medicine is magical and magical is art. Think of the boy in the bubble and the baby with the babbling heart. And I believe these are days, lasers in the jungle, lasers in the jungle somewhere. Staccato signals of constant information, elusive affiliation of millionaires and billionaires and babies. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is a long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in the corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Bubble Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your back and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour, and we will go to the phones right after a quick visit to the email bag. Let's see here. This in from Marty. And now a bit of levity. Can I blame you and your West Virginia Mountaineers for screwing up my NCAA bracket? You absolutely can. Marty says they were supposed to beat Kentucky. Well, you didn't ask me, now did you? That bracket was set up that way for a reason. Okay, enough fun stuff. Back to the serious. Notes in from my buddy Joe Ray, otherwise known as the Foxhole Atheist. This is pretty good. This goes back to Saturday. You know, I've asserted on a number of occasions on this program that God is a God of irony, if there is a God at all. You know, the Muslims say that there are 99 names for God, that there are actually 100, but the 100th is known by the camel and he ain't talking. Well, the camel knows. I mean, you ever taken a long, hard look at a camel? Yeah, the camel knows that the 100th name and the primary name for God is irony. And with that in mind, I was struck by the irony of the fact that while there were people at the rally who pointed out that, I think the quote was, in a few hours they will begin bombing Libya. Well, no. We were bombing Libya while the rally was going on. And so Joe Ray dropped me a note on Saturday, and he says, well, howdy, Bob. Global powers have shifted this Saturday, the 19th of March. For weeks now, the world powers have known that there would be UN action somewhere in North Africa. As of 11:20 a.m. Pacific Northwest time, the U.S. is still just giving big speeches of future actions. The French have already racked up 4 confirmed kills. Regardless of future actions from the U.S., the world will remember that the French beat the world champions in the game of bombing brown people this time around. This shows that the U.S. is for some reason slow to react, sluggish, or non-responsive to global affairs. Regardless of any altruistic intentions for Libya, the French are exposing the weakness of the U.S. empire. The real irony is that if the administration had listened to the anti-Iraq Afghanistan protesters outside their gate, the U.S. never would have been beat to the ballpark in Libya. He continues, I can no longer find the news article from this morning, but the U.S. Embassy in Yemen told U.S. citizens to stay inside. What the F, Bob? Why the hell are we not evacuating our people out of there? This will be much more bloody than Libya because the military itself is dividing. Is Obama going to bomb this nation without congressional authorization, too? Because from where I sit, there will be a whole hell of a lot more civilian deaths there. I think we've actually been living in the world of 1984 for a while now. It took a so-called Democratic president doing the same things as the Republicans to wake me up to that fact. What's next? Rationing chocolate? You know, look, this is one of those only Nixon can go to China moments. And it really is exposing what Sandra calls the cruise missile liberals. Now, bear in mind, I saw that smarmy old Nazi. And I use the term with Pat Buchanan the same way I use it with Russell Pierce. You know, it's not what, no, I'm not saying he's, you know, what a Nazi. No, he's a Nazi. If you gave him the spiffy black suit, he would put it on as long as the boots were made by Brooks Brothers. I saw that smarmy old hate-filled Nazi trying to lecture, and her position was not very tenable, that it was okay to be bombing it because Barack Obama was doing the bombing. But I can't help just snickering up my sleeve every time I see one of these right-wing Republicans. What was the line that... Haley Barbour used the other day about Barack Obama, like a new convert to the gospel. One of these right-wing pig-lickens talking, how dare the president act unilaterally? My God, Congress is the only one has the power to declare war. Where was the congressional authorization? Shut up, you godforsaken fascist. You didn't say it 8 long years ago. You've lost the credibility to say it now. Now, having said that, I disagree with bombing brown people. Unless the brown people have done something to us first. And even then, I'm not sure war is the answer. Because there has never been a war on this planet that could not have been avoided. Not one. Not even the Second World War. Could have been avoided. It's not to say we never should have gotten in it, but before it started, it could have been avoided. See, that's the thing about Libya. Does Libya strike you as at all different from Bahrain, from Yemen, from Egypt, from Tunisia? Because it does me. Because in Libya, they went right for the guns, right early. When that was a possibility in other states as well, but they have not, because they were observing. It's because Gaddafi's a bad man and he just comes out and kills, and then when he starts killing, you want to kill back. Well, when the side that's in the right starts shooting, you can bet your ass that somebody has been encouraging them to shoot. And 9 times out of 10, the people who are saying that the answer lies at the muzzle of a gun have an ulterior motive. Because that just ups the ante on the killing. But now we're in it. And let's see, the French don't want NATO to handle it. And the British do want NATO to handle it. And so far, how much does an F-15E Strike Eagle cost? Because we're down one! We know those Tomahawk cruise missiles that we've probably fired 100 of, we know those are $1 million apiece. $100 million. What could $100 million do that didn't involve killing? But we won't bother with those questions because they're so godforsaken troublesome. So, with that having been said, we will go back to the phones. Or go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Salam, Bob.
Salam, Tony. What's up, man?
How you doing, man?
You know, I'm back. Wow. And I'm rested up a little bit. That was a long weekend. Well, it's been a long couple of weeks. I got some saddle sores.
Surprised you didn't get arrested.
Oh, I wasn't trying.
I saw Mike on YouTube. He got arrested, huh?
Yeah, you had to mean to get arrested.
Okay, I see what you mean.
You go into the zone, at which point, and then they declare you trespassing, and then they tell you to leave, and you don't leave, and they tell you to leave again, and you don't leave again, and they tell you to leave again, and you don't leave again, and then they arrest you for not following a lawful order.
So they give you ample warning then?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I find it interesting that, for lack of a better word, these cops are just Black Hawk Down style. I mean, it's almost military garb in a way.
Oh, it is military garb. It's paramilitary garb. It was like something from Star Wars across, based on the video that I saw last night. It was like something from Star Wars with the Virginia State Police in Quantico.
That's scary. Because when you get arrested by a cop, I mean, obviously they're...
Well, and it's overkill, too.
Yeah, when you got that much hardware on you and...
If you've got to bring shields and batons and face masks and body armor against people who are avowedly nonviolent,
then
that is a national security. That is a fascist national security state that lives in fear. But of course, it's also worth remembering, Tony, that all fascist states live in fear. Fascist states are terrified of their citizenry.
Yeah. That's true. Hey, listen, we haven't talked for a while, so I'm going to bounce around a little bit if it's okay.
Yeah, go right ahead.
What did they get her new Bourdain?
Which one? I saw the Nicaragua, and then last night I saw the Vienna.
Did you see, I believe, there was one in between that, I think.
Well, I saw the Haiti episode as well.
That was it. Oh, how powerful was that Haiti episode?
Yeah, well, that and then I didn't think he could top it, and the Nicaragua one, the scenes in the dump, or the landfill, or whatever you want to call it, they just made my gut drop.
I'll tell you this much. All these people, you know, they take pot shots at Sean Penn, but that guy walks it like he talks it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how he grew up, but it's obviously, I mean, let's face it, he's a huge star. He makes a lot of money. He's dating Scarlett Johansson, right? Life is pretty good, but look at the way look what he chooses to do. He chooses to go down there and live in a tent. Now, I don't know how long he stays down there, but all these people that take pot shots at him and call him communist and stuff, I mean, why don't they go down there and do that? They got a lot of nerve taking shots at that guy.
Yeah. And but by the same token, you know, it's the operation of hypocrisy, Tony. It's like listening to the Republicans talking about, well, Barack Obama is acting unilaterally, doesn't have the power to do that. If it was a white guy doing it, they would, especially a white Republican, they would be as quiet as silent as a graven image. The fact of the matter is, where Republicans are concerned, Barack Obama just has 3/5 of the same presidential power George Bush had.
Well, didn't George Bush go to war without a vote or without a Congress approval?
Well, he got a congressional resolution, sorta, maybe, kinda, but it didn't matter. He was going to do it either way.
Yeah, that's true. So now we're involved in 3 wars in the Middle East. How does that make you feel?
Sick. Sick. Because I have a functioning, I have a working relationship with history. And as such, I realize that what we have started is, in many ways, it's not a little war, it's not a warlet, it's not a police action, it's not a no-fly zone. We have started a blood feud. With people for whom the blood feud is still very much a reality.
Here's something to think about, and I don't know if you heard this is true, but I've been following foreign news sites, and if you haven't heard anything about this, I'll just dismiss it as a rumor. Libyan Taliban are getting support from our airstrikes. Have you heard anything about that?
I know that that's what Gaddafi has claimed. And that is also what, because Gaddafi claimed it, it is also what, which organization? Oh, yeah, the American Family Association of Tupelo Mississippi.
Yep.
Is now broadcasting, Al-Qaeda is behind the rebellion in Libya. So this no-fly zone is, in fact, helping the Muslims who killed 3,000 Americans on 9/11. But helping our sworn enemies, especially if they're Muslims, does not seem to be a bother to Obama.
Now, if that is true, which who knows for sure, unless you actually have boots on the ground, if that is true, I thought, what does it say about our war with Al-Qaeda? I mean, if it's true.
Well, there's no okay, for starters, there's no such thing as the war with Al-Qaeda.
Of course not. I understand that.
You know, what we call Al-Qaeda is about 35 disaffected Saudis in caves in Afghanistan or Western Pakistan.
Well, you understand what I'm trying to say, though. I mean, I hear what you're saying. You're absolutely right. Al Qaeda doesn't exist, or it exists, but on a meaningless label. But if it doesn't make any sense that if they did exist, why? And they're supposed to be our enemy. Why are we supplying them? Why are we supplying them air support? Unless we're supplying, I don't know.
Well, I don't. But see, yeah, but I don't believe it is. And you know, it's like this Brian Fisher guy. This is the guy who claimed that this is the same guy who claimed that God was striking grizzly bears because of gay marriage. Okay, I mean that's how insane this little bastard is. But he's a Muslim hater, and so he has jumped on the Gaddafi talking point that Al Qaeda is the people who are attacking his government. Now, to be fair, like I said, and I'm trying to be consistent here, there was a very dedicated nonviolent presence inside Egypt and inside Tunisia. And lo and behold, it comes to Libya, and somebody wants to get the guns out.
That figures.
Now, why that is, you know, I don't necessarily know. Because 1,000 people died in Egypt. And people have died elsewhere. But you don't see people taking up arms because there is a lot of dedication to these principles of nonviolence. Libya, for some reason or another, they want, you know, they had to shoot back.
Yeah, well, maybe it's the way, because, you know, I'm sure those people don't have complete freedom to the internet the way we do. Maybe that's just the way Gaddafi presented it to them. Who knows? Because they can only, you can only go by what.
Oh, but you know, Gaddafi is a bastard, okay?
Yeah.
He's a rotten, dead-souled, pathetic excuse of a human being.
Well, once again, he was our bastard, as usual. Go ahead.
Well, but he wasn't for a long time.
That's true.
You know, remember, Ronald Reagan got so mad at him that he slaughtered his 3-year-old daughter.
That's true.
By bombing his tent compound outside of the city. And, you know, didn't get Gaddafi, but certainly killed his little baby girl. Yay, Reagan! Wow, what an American hero, killing 3-year-olds. Man, that takes some balls. But to be more to the point, though, I'm surprised I haven't seen more out of the right wing on this. Did you hear about the letter that Gaddafi sent to Obama after we declared that we were going to start bombing?
Yeah, he called him his African brother, and
no, he called him my son.
My son, my bad. I'm sorry. I don't know the exact details.
Yeah, you are my son, my loving son, and even if the bombs start falling, I will continue to think of you as my loving son, and I know that you are a good Muslim like me.
He's not a Muslim.
No, but, I mean, come on. I know why the right wing isn't talking about that. They're still busy masturbating, Tony. See? He's probably seen the birth certificate from Kenya. Oh!
Doesn't anybody knock before they come in? That's just so great.
No, I know. Yeah, the Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I know.
That's a great line. I never thought about it, Tony, but they probably went, oh, my God, we got our platform for the next election with that line. You know they're going to bring that out. You know they are.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, after years of being a bogeyman, the Muammar Gaddafi is going to be credible.
Yeah. I'm
surprised Fox hasn't had him on yet.
Dude, I'm waiting for one of those guys to give Gaddafi credibility, because if they do that, then they're completely blown any possibility of legitimate news. Not that they were before, but you understand what I'm saying. If Sean Hannity or any of those pinheads give him any kind of credibility for that statement...
Well, it started, and it will make the rounds, because if the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi is doing it, it will make its way to Sean Hannity's desk. Okay? Remember, the American Family Association, as crazy as what they say may sound, remember, the Newt Gingrich quietly, and we talked about this on the show last Thursday night, Newt Gingrich quietly funneled $200,000 to their hate campaign in Iowa to replace judges because that gay marriage is going to destroy America just like the Muslims. It's one of these days it'll be Muslim gay marriage, that's what it's going to be.
Oh, no. If that ever happens, Sean's head's going to explode. Anyway, can I talk to you about a few other things we haven't talked about?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Pap Buchanan, how anybody gives this guy any credibility whatsoever. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when he was a kid, didn't he used to throw rocks at black people?
I believe you're right. I believe I have read that somewhere along the way.
I mean, how can...
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, you know, Well, you know, clearly MSNBC is a liberal network now.
Yeah.
Horse. You know what? If MSNBC had not gotten rid of Keith Olbermann, and in fact had cloned Keith Olbermann, and had Keith Olbermann on TV 23 hours out of 24, and still managed to have an hour of Morning Joe, so Pat Buchanan could sit there and babble off at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know what? It wouldn't have been a liberal network. You get my meaning, Tony?
I mean,
MSNBC, the so-called liberal cable news channel,
has Pat Buchanan on the payroll. This is a guy who said he admired Hitler.
And remember, he used to throw rocks at black people when he was a kid. Didn't I read that somewhere? I'm assuming it is true.
It wouldn't surprise me. He's really that kind of guy.
Yeah, I don't see. Oh, did you hear about this? According to Ann Coulter, radiation is no longer harmful. Did you see that?
Well, that may be because she's from another planet and radiation doesn't harm her kind.
Did you see what she said?
Yeah, I did. I can't even stand to bring her name up because she is so utterly, completely, totally irrelevant.
She is. She's an absolute train wreck. And you know what? I think she's starting to realize more and more that she is irrelevant. So I think she just opens her mouth and crap falls out of it. She's hoping that somebody will, you know, want to interview her about what she said. Because really, I mean, you're right. She is completely irrelevant. She's hanging on to her last 15 minutes of fame the best way she can. So she's just going to open her mouth and stuff's going to fall out. And she's going to hope somebody catches on to it. We haven't talked in a while. Can I talk to you about Japan?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. When I saw obviously we know where it's at and it's been a little while, but when you saw the damage, you know, it kind of sucks that the damage looks, it brings back, not, I'm sure if it brings back, but you kind of think, wow, is this World War II footage? This is now. It's kind of a shame that we're the only country that wreaked that kind of havoc on somebody, and it's happened again. And when you see it, you can make that connection to what we did. You know, it really kind of sucks that the people had to go through that again, but it also makes it also shows that what we did. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but once and for all, let's understand Japan for what it is. Japan is just as I said back last year when the Deepwater Horizon disaster was unfolding, and I noted that those were not tar balls washing up on southern shores, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas. That was conservatism washing up on their shores. Well, we have to understand the BP the Japanese horror the same way. That is not that's not a failure of the nuclear of nuclear power. Okay, there's too much detail out there, Tony. There's too much information out there now that we understand the corners that were cut and the things that were done to just soak a little more profit out of the system. Okay, so what is it's not the failure of nuclear power, because what actually happened in Japan is what you can expect to happen sooner or later to every nuclear power plant on the planet.
It's only a matter.
Okay? What happened in Japan is the absolute untrammeled triumph of capitalism. This is what capitalism expects, this is what capitalism wants, and this is what capitalism causes.
Yeah, you are right. I mean, it's only a matter of time before that happens here. And when it does happen here, I'm just going to be interested to see how the media covers it, because, like, or who they're going to try and pin it on. But, I mean, they were keeping their fuel rods on top of the roof, weren't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great point.
They just shot them.
They couldn't fit them into the mattress, okay? Otherwise.
hang on a second. Sorry about that. You know, what happened to them, like, this whole thing, if I can kind of put this into perspective, it's really horrible and sad, but when you see something like that, and, like, for example, the NFL draft's coming up, and I don't know if you're into March Madness or not, but it is exciting. But when you see something like that happen in Japan, you kind of realize what's really important and what's not important. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, March Madness is okay, but it kind of puts everything in perspective, you know?
Oh, it did. Well, it certainly sucked all the fun out of my March Madness.
Yeah, I mean,
but and I don't want to sound like some completely shallow horse's rear end, but it. Yeah. Because, you know, that's not what the world resolves around. Oh, wait, what? Bob's been disturbed? You know, no, that's not how the universe operates.
I'm going to ask you something about Gilbert Gottfried, if it's okay.
Yeah, sure.
He tweeted, can you tell me what he tweeted? Because I don't want to misquote it again.
No, I don't. I'm not going to go. It was just hateful crap, and it's not worth repeating.
Here's the thing about that guy. He did a show out here in Vegas called Gilbert Gottfried's Dirty Jokes, right? And he basically just stood on stage and told dirty jokes for an hour, right? And they called that comedy. Now, I don't know how you feel about dirty jokes now, but I could stand on stage for an hour and tell dirty jokes.
I mean, I've got a million of them.
Yeah, Carlin's a comedian. Pryor's a comedian. This guy's not a comedian. Anybody could stand there and just stuff.
No, it's every now and then. Every now and then, I'll be clicking around the TV, and I'll land on one of those stupid Comedy Central roasts, and all they are is F-word fests. And no, I mean, anybody can do that. That's why I move on.
I mean, but he's not a comedian. I mean, you're right, it's an F-word fest. So I don't know how this guy thinks he's a comedian or not, but he's not. There's one more thing I wanted to ask you. What'd you think of that Lewis Black video I sent you?
Oh God. I wrote back that was the Glenn Beck has Nazi Tourette's thing. I hadn't seen that in ages, and I just stood there watching it and laughed all over again.
Oh God, how great it was. Two more things and I'll let you go. The first thing is, did you get that email I sent you about that cab driver that was killed in a robbery?
I've been on the road so much, I may not have seen that one, Tony.
Okay, here's the thing. He was an Ethiopian, and he came here for 3 months, and he was killed in a robbery attempt. All these guys, who like O'Reilly and all these dudes who get on the air and talk about illegal aliens coming here and murdering people, right?
Yeah.
This guy just been off the boat for 3 months, about 3 months, and he just happened to get the radio call, and he was robbed and he was killed. This guy had a family, right? And he was trying to do the right things. How come nobody, all these guys, as soon as, I mean, if anybody illegal does any farts, it's all over Fox News, but this guy gets killed, how come nobody ever talks about stuff like that?
Well, because it doesn't fit in with their, it doesn't fit in with their model. It doesn't fit in with their paradigm, Tony. They're only going to report the things that matter for them. And frankly, some immigrant new to the United States doesn't matter. And God knows, if he was brown, he's less than not mad. Really, you know, he's invisible.
He was Ethiopian, yeah, he was brown. You went to the peace march, the anti-war march this weekend, right?
Right, precisely.
Okay, did you meet anybody new, or was there any, or mostly people you've met already?
I'd seen a lot of the folks there at previous actions and so forth. I got to meet Sailor Chick in the chat room. That was really, really cool. And of course, I'd never spent much time at all with Malloy, and got to hung out and talked with Malloy more than I've talked to him, other than email, ever.
Okay, so you didn't. That's cool. One more thing. I don't really like donating to the Red Cross, because the Red Cross is the Red Cross. Can you recommend anybody we could? I mean, I know Japan has the third largest or the second largest economy in the world, but can you recommend anybody we could donate to? Because I don't think the Red Cross really.
I think I saw that Alternet was suggesting, what was the Mercy Corps or Mercy Partners or something like, if you go to Alternet, I'll bet you'll see something, alternet.org, you'll see something pop up. There are a lot of good organizations out there, and I don't have any right off the top of my head. I can tell you, you know, the Red Cross, I think your instincts with the Red Cross are probably good. No, they are good, because there are issues.
There are issues, yeah.
My father, as I've mentioned in the past, was a Second World War veteran.
Okay.
And he knew people who had been, for instance, adrift at sea, taken captive, things like that.
Yeah.
And one of the stories, he had a real bad feeling for the Red Cross after the Second World War, because he used to tell the story of these guys, and I have no reason to doubt my father. My father was certainly not a pathological liar.
Yeah.
At one point, the Red Cross had delivered a packet of little, and I think these guys were some sort of captives, or maybe they were waiting rescue or something, in some sort of a camp after their ship had been sunk, something like that. They were in destitute circumstances, and the Red Cross delivered them little packets of like toothpaste, toothbrush, soap, comb, that kind of thing, needle and thread. And when they got back and were rescued and reintegrated, they received a bill from the Red Cross.
Really?
Yeah, not kidding.
Oh, my God.
Doctors Without Borders. Doctors Without Borders. Texas Betsy suggesting, an appropriate charity.
Okay, well, Doctors Without Borders, Texas, Busy, and this sailor chick, is she new to your show, or has she been around?
Oh, no. She's been listening for ages.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, like, when you meet people that from the show, I mean, and they tell you, like, because, I mean, I don't know how people, or what Texas Betsy does, or, I mean, I know she was a teacher, I believe, but when you meet...
Still is.
People, okay, she is still a teacher, but, yeah, okay, I hadn't been following her for a while. When you meet people from the show, and, like, they're working class people like most of us are, and they tell you how much your show gets them through the day and stuff, how does that make you feel?
It makes life worth living, Tony.
Really?
I mean, I'm not kidding. It really, really does. It makes me, because, you know, we started this thing with the idea that it was something that had to be done. And it started as a sort of living memorial to Boss Man Wayne's departed wife, Gina.
Okay.
And, that's where that comes from.
All right, cool.
And she died before we came back on the air. But she was part and parcel of why I was able to succeed at all over in America's fifth smallest radio market. And so when we got run off the air by an aggregation of forces, including the coal industry,
okay.
Boss Man Wayne was the one who said, you know, this can't just end. This has to go forward. And so there was a feeling that this was necessary, that people had to have an opportunity to talk and an opportunity to converse. And share how they were feeling, especially in the midst of the horrors of the Bush administration. And so, we agreed, okay, we're going to go forward. And Wayne funded the equipment that got us started. And like I said, as a living memorial to his darling wife, Gina. And for virtually every, practically, with very little let up, every day for the last... coming up on, I can't even do the math anymore, 7-8 years, you know, there's been some manifestation of this program.
Oh, cool.
And when people do say, you know, this really helps, it keeps me from screaming, it makes my head feel like it doesn't want to explode all the time, then you get a sense of satisfaction and a sense of doing something that actually matters in this life. More than maybe a lot of people are able to have in other ways. And for that, I am extremely grateful. I am extremely humbled and profoundly touched. Because the one, you know, lives are transient, Tony. And there are, you know, I look up at a jet passing over in the sky, a passenger jet, and I think about the 200 or 300 people in there. And that's 200 or 300 human beings, and, you know, I'm never going to know them. But the way I was taught, we do not know, whose lives we will touch and how. And the only thing we can do is try with every day of our life to make sure that the things that we do are decent and that we don't make people more miserable, that we make them feel better. And if you do that, then you've come as close to immortality and as close to God, as anybody's ever going to get.
That's true. One more thing, I'll let you go. How's the battle with the coal thing going?
It's going. We're in a sort of preparatory phase, trying to build awareness, and just doing the best that we can. It's scary as hell, because there's been mountaintop removal closer to me, but this is going to be the biggest that's ever been anywhere near me, and it is sickening. Because it's gonna make people die.
Now correct me if I'm wrong, but they rip off the top of mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And just to
they don't rip off the top of a mountain, Tony. They destroy a mountain. You know, when a mountain's 1,400 feet high and you take 800 feet of it, it's not a mountain anymore.
You mean they actually cut off 800 feet of a mountain?
Yeah, and then they shove it over in the valley next to it. They kill everything in the valley that lives. They clog the streams. They murder the streams. They leach poisons into the ground, into the groundwater, into the drinking water supply, into the local streams that survive.
And they get away with it.
Get away with it? The state of West Virginia wants more of it to be done.
Wow. who's the guy in charge? Who's the guy, senator? What is there somebody who's leading?
Well, no. I mean, there's a Department of Environmental Protection that does anything but. The entire government of practically the entire government of the state of West Virginia is a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry, and a big chunk of the federal government is as well. And this is kind of the ultimate indignity. And maybe I sound creepy for saying this, but you know, it used to be that at least it was Americans that were blowing us up. But now it's India's answer to the Koch brothers. It's Shashi and Ravi Ruia and their multi-billion dollar SR Corporation of India. And so they're going to take every scrap of coal they get out of that mountain, they're going to take and they're going to send it to India.
I can't believe all these corporations are selling this country out. It's pretty unbelievable.
And apparently that's okay with state government, local government, federal government. It's okay with everybody except the people who object to being poisoned and killed.
I don't know. We seem to be selling this country down the river. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've already got the Russians over here, too.
And the funny thing about it is, I mean,
The Russians are mining and blowing up mountains too in West Virginia.
I see what you're doing and stuff, but it's like anything else. I mean, people say, "Well, until you really see it, you see it every day, so you're living it." So we see it and we understand what you're going through, but we really don't see it. You know what I mean? You're there on the front line. So with you, it's more like
it's personal.
It's a fight for survival. I mean, you have a family and stuff. You don't want them getting sick, or you don't want them not having clean water. I mean, we have basic needs. We need clean water, we need shelter, we need food. And if your family doesn't have, if you can't, as a man, if you can't provide security for your family, then not what good are you, but it's in your genetic code. But also the people around you, too. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, these are my neighbors. These are my friends. This is my community.
But mostly it's your family, too. You want to make sure your kids grow up, God forbid, with any kind of health problems. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anyway, thanks, Bob.
All right, you take care, Tony. Bye now.
Take care, Bo. Bye.
And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey,
Susan, what's up?
Okay, first of all, another group for the guy.
Tony.
I don't remember his name.
Tony.
It's a group called Mercy Corps.
Yeah, that's who I was trying to remember. I couldn't. Mercy Partners, Mercy something. Yeah, I saw them mentioned on Alternet.
They are out of Portland, and the Minotaur is a disaster anywhere in the world, literally anywhere. They're gone. And they pick up their medical supplies. It's doctors, nurses, the whole nine yards, they're gone, and they produce the medical care. They were in Haiti. They've been in every major disaster you can think of as fast as they could get there, and they get there within days. They're in Japan now, I can guarantee it. And they don't rip off money. I would say 99% of the money you give towards them goes to operating expenses. So you know.
Yeah, they make it count. They make the money count.
Yeah, right. These people are also dedicated to the point where they also cough in their own money. Also, you mentioned what does a F-15 costs $35 million.
Wow.
Yeah. What I want to know is who's paying for this?
Right.
Right. As if I didn't know already. Technically, they should, you know, we should be getting help financially. We won't.
No.
You know that?
No, no, there's no check. And the Arab League signed off, but you know what?
It's not like we're going to see a 50 cent knockoff at the pumps.
The Arab League is real good at saying, acting like a tiger and then running like hell.
Yeah.
You know, they act real brave, and the minute something comes up, they run like hell. They're a bunch of cowards.
Precisely.
I'm not advocating for this foray into Libya. I think it's insane. But the Arab League is just, they're not worth the powder it would take to blow them to hell. Now, as far as dear President Nakhchour, my father served on the WASP in World War II.
Right.
My Donald served in World War II and Korea, and they would be both so very disappointed and ashamed. Not because of what he is, but because of what he has just done.
It's wrong. It's not wrong because he did it or because somebody else did it or didn't do it or anything like that. It's wrong because it's wrong.
Yeah, that's it. It was wrong.
I mean, you know what? I don't want to sound like Pat Buchanan, and I don't, because I've been arguing this since long before Pat Buchanan became converted because a brown guy was dropping the bombs. But I want to be clear about something. I do have a passing familiarity with the Constitution of the United States, Susan.
Yeah. And the
Constitution of the United States says that only Congress has the power to declare war.
Exactly. And
just once, it would be nice to see us actually follow that. Now, we didn't follow it in the Civil War. I don't recall if we followed it in the Spanish-American War or not. We did follow it in the First and the Second World Wars. There was no declaration of war in Korea, and certainly not in Vietnam or Grenada or any of the filthy little secret wars that Ronald Reagan ran around the globe. There was no declaration of war. There was an authorization of the use of force for Iraq.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah.
In all of the hoorah that has started up since this started, there has been one voice who has been utterly consistent from day one.
I guess we're not talking about me.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about in the Congress.
Yeah, Dennis Kucinich?
Dennis Kucinich. The other ones, I mean, you can see them covering their political asses. But Dennis Kucinich, he came in and he said, no, no, no. Constitution says this. No, no, no.
And you know who else was consistent? He's dead now. And he may have been saying it for the wrong reasons.
Robert Byrd.
Robert Byrd. I had a lot of disagreements with Robert Byrd. But he was right in this regard. He said, Congress has abdicated, and he was talking about Iraq, he said Congress has abdicated its duties. Not its rights, but its duties.
Yeah.
And that it would come back to bite them. But let me point something else out, Susan. This is another one of those little pieces of evidence. This is another one of those little breadcrumbs on the trail that leads you to the sign that says, hey, this is what empires do.
Exactly. This is what empires, especially fascist empires, do.
And I've never known of a democratic empire. I've never known of no. Empires by definition are fascistic.
Yeah. And as far as France's role in this, it can be described in three words: light, sweet, crude.
Well, sure, and I'll go you one better and describe it in one word. Three syllables. Sarkozy. The guy's a right-wing asshat. Of course he wants to bomb something.
Well, of course. But what they're after is they're after that Libyan oil. That lovely, lovely Libyan oil.
Doesn't surprise me in the least. And
that's what they're after.
Well, and that's why I say that it's a little bit more than odd to me that where nonviolence works so well in Tunisia, and it worked in Egypt, it started out nonviolently in Libya and then went to gunfire almost before anybody had a chance to say boo.
Yeah, and you mentioned you have to wonder about the guys, pushing the guns. How much do you want to bet they're the guys selling the guns?
Oh, I won't take the bet.
Like us.
Yeah.
Seeing as how we're the biggest army.
Well, just, that's where we cue up Calvin Coolidge, who says, the business of America is business.
Business.
Right. Exactly.
Now, may I bring up another subject?
Do please.
I don't know if you brought it up because I forgot the time and didn't come in until a half hour. The American citizenship test.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You mean the ones that everybody failed?
I didn't.
Well, no.
Now, I urge everybody to go to that and take it. I really do. Because if you can't take that test with less than six wrong, you need to read a history book. You don't need to read a history book. You need to read a civics book. And may I make an observation?
Absolutely.
Is it just me, or is the declining rate in people who know things like the name of the present sitting vice president, due to the fact that our schools no longer teach such fun goodies as civics? They teach social studies.
Well, that was one of those things that Bob Byrd brought up, too.
I was taught history. I was taught civics. I was taught I would venture to guess you could take a kid in school today and ask them, how does a bill become a law? And they go, huh? Unless his parents were liberal and they had sat him down like I did mine, and I taught them.
Wow. Question one. Okay, there's 100 tests. There's 100 questions. You only get to answer 10. You got to get 6 right to pass. 38% of the, and this was done by Newsweek. Just give people a little bit of background, Susan.
Yeah.
It was done by Newsweek. Let's see. 73% of those answering could not correctly identify why we fought the Cold War. 44% were unable to define the Bill of Rights. 6% couldn't even circle Independence Day on a calendar. 38% failed the test.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a statistically relevant sample as well. I just clicked on it, and my random questions. Here, let's just do it and see how dumb Bob is. When was the Declaration of Independence adopted? And yeah, okay, so I got that one. Question two. God damn, this is like who's buried in Grant's tomb.
Yeah, I know.
What color was George Washington's white horse? What happened at the Constitutional Convention? Well, I feel like I cheated because, you know, I was kind of involved in it. Okay.
I can give you the damned horse's name.
The Federalist Papers supported the passage of the U.S. Constitution. Name one of the writers. You want Madison or Hamilton?
Hamilton.
Well, okay. Okay, 3-for-3. Who was president during World War I?
Wilson.
Yeah, that's why you get to do your Tom Cruise, your Tom Hanks impression for that. Wilson! Oh, by the way, Woodrow Wilson, you want to know how many people got that question wrong, Susan?
A whole bunch.
80% of Americans taking the test. No. They've so got to be kidding. Who did the United States fight in World War II?
Italy.
Germany, Japan, sure.
Germany. The Axis.
40% got that one wrong. Okay, I'm almost...
You believe that?
During the Cold War, what was the main concern of the United States? Shall we say Soviet expansionism?
No, communism.
Same, same. Yeah, 73% blew that.
Where have they been, underneath a rock?
What did Susan B. Anthony do?
Women's suffrage and women's rights.
Yeah, 59% of America got that wrong. They thought she invented Toll House cookies.
Yeah, apparently.
No. What did Martin Luther King Jr. do?
Honest to God, they asked it.
Yeah, no kidding. Honest to God. But you know what? That's at least a little bit inspiring because 77% got it right. 23% of America. Oddly enough, the same percentage of Americans as our teabaggers blew it.
Yeah, got it wrong. Yeah. Just blew me away.
Who's in charge of the executive branch?
The president.
27% got that one wrong. We elect a senator for how many years? Oh, Jesus, you're kidding.
Six.
Sixty-one percent of the American people got that wrong. Stunning. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, who's buried in Grant's tomb?
Grant.
Mr. and Mrs. Grant. It's a trick question. Yeah. Hey, Susan. Thanks a million. I probably wouldn't have brought that up, but that's just. And we wonder why America...
I urge people to take the test because it's...
Well, right. See, the thing is, I don't know if it demographically breaks out this way, but the fact of the matter is, I would imagine the same people flunked this test as flunked the Pew Center's religion test.
Well, no, the reason I brought it up is because if you do not know anything about your government, it's very easy for that government to control you. And past a certain point, then you are living in a dictatorship.
Well, if you don't know how long a senator's elected for, you might be elected for life, so you don't got to go back to the polls no more.
Yeah, and then past a certain point, then you get back to England of the 1890s, where the, quote, lower classes weren't even taught how to read because, you see, they wouldn't keep their place.
Bingo. They would, in fact, get all uppity. Uppity. The word is... Yeah.
Want to go back to that, people? Think about it. Teach your kids. it's very easy to keep some in on this. Just take it.
I really would. Honest to God, I really would love to watch a room full of teabaggers take that test.
Yeah, and by the way, Washington's horse's name is Traveler.
No, that was Robert E. Lee's.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, gotcha.
I used to know Washington's horse.
Wasn't that Trigger? No, sorry. We'll talk to you later, Susan. Have a wonderful night.
Okay. Thanks, Glenn.
Bye.
Yeah, nice night. Bye-bye.
Oh, let's see. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, what was the war of 1812? Listen, that test is... Yeah.
Where did they fight the Battle of New Orleans?
You know, I mean, I'm always I'm always shocked because that test, you know, it's so damn easy. But then I think, oh, wait a minute, you know, I majored in government, so maybe I should back off. But I'm always amazed that people don't know who the Supreme Court justice is. Then I have to say, oh, snap out of it, Sandra. You know what I'm saying? I forget.
Well, and see, I kind of go there, too. You know, I mean, I've studied a lot of this stuff, so maybe I'm being a bit of an elitist. But then Sandra, I kind of back up and go, wait, how many of these things could I have answered correctly in 11th grade?
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, in during our time, we actually had a fair amount of civic courses. So, I mean, it was required. So I actually knew, you know what I mean? It was pretty common. I think that kind of... It really does explain why we can have a sitting president just start a war, because people are just, you know, they don't even know what the hell is going on.
Well, isn't declaring war the emperor's job?
Well, no, but it's just, you know, the thing about this is just killing me. It's like, I've seen a lot of different comments about, oh, it's about the oil, but let me put on a realist hat for a minute. If it was about the oil, they would have let him slaughter those people and have it go back to normal. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, because the oil would have kept flowing.
Right, and he would massacre those people, and then it would have went back to market friendly. So people need to back off of that argument. I think a better argument is that it's just sort of not feeling relevant, and the U.S. is like acting like an empire. I think we need to follow on that because that's what we do best. And so,
that's why I've kind of been working the empire theme as hard as I have this evening, Sandra.
Yeah, we need to realize that we have to maintain our presence, and I think Obama just, and it's completely knee jerk, which is what's scary about him. It's like, dude.
Well, there's this developing thread, Sandra, that says that he was talked into it by Susan Rice, Hillary Clinton, and that other woman.
Well, they always say that about Obama. I don't know. I'm not buying that argument. I'm thinking it's more of, you know, it's his way of using the military. I mean,
well, and given the fact that that trope is being published by the for-profit media, it's also a way of emasculating him. Okay.
Well, yeah, I don't. You know, it's just absurd. But it's absurd, though. He is well aware of the power. If you keep an eye on what he's doing with the civil liberties debacle that Bush passed on to him, he's grabbing now at all the gusto. No, I'm not buying the, oh, he was pushed into it. Oh, hell no. I think that it was a really stupid choice because right now it's like some sort of theater of absurd with him talking about, oh, I'm trying to hand it off. You don't hand nothing off, nigga. Yours. Have fun. Okay?
Own it.
I'm like, no, fool. That's what's making me laugh, because it's like you are relying on Sarkozy, who is in battle with a fascist, Le Pen's daughter. No, that bitch is in trouble himself. He going to jump on any plane and go bomb himself in about a minute here.
Yeah, he's doing some serious dog. Yeah, Sarkozy, if you're paying attention, is doing some serious dog wagging.
Well, yes, I'm saying, because he has to deal with Le Pen's daughter, who is working real hard to get some real power for the real right wing in France, if that's not scary enough. And so, you know, he's a joke. So Obama is in a bit of a situation. That's that guy. So, and I don't mean to make light of it, because I'm kind of scared thinking, Well, we're going to fire some more teachers? I mean, how the hell are they justifying this, Bob? This is the thing. I thought we were facing cuts on a...
Yeah, I thought we had a budget crisis.
No, cuts to the American people of all sorts of services. We're supposed to accept it because, oh, we're in so much trouble financially. And you're going to turn around and shoot $100 million worth of missiles in Tripoli? And then turn around and come back to us and say...
Yeah, and that's for starters. That's for starters.
We're going to have to listen to them talk about cutting Social Security and Medicare and the sort of fascist turnabouts in different states. And you're going to turn around... You know, so that's empire. That is empire all the way. The whole...
And all the other little trappings are sham. And see, we started out this conversation talking about what American people don't know about American history or American government. Well, let me be a real geek and just remind people that during the entirety of his life, the guy whose name was Octavian, who they subsequently renamed Augustus Caesar, never took the title of emperor. Okay, he was imperator. He was, which, you know, that was something that people were, generals were hailed as on the field. That just means leader. He was first citizen. He was consul. But all through the long, long reign of Caesar Augustus, he said, hey, look, I'm just getting things stabilized enough that we can go back. And hey, look, I've restored the republic when it was empire all along.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a lot of parallels, and you can get with the Roman model, you know. I mean, even Claudius had England, you know. They always got somewhere. So, you know, Obama is just going in the same tradition with the rest of these presidents that we've had, but the sort of not consulting point blank, at least even a pretense of it. Is like, yay, shit, we really have gone off the deep end to the Republic is pretty much gone at this point. What else can you say about it?
The thing I guess that is of greater concern to me, Sandra, is how do you deal with the people who want to maintain the fiction that there is a Republic? How do you deal with them?
Well, like Rachel Maddow, I mean, forgive me, I mean, I like her, but...
I love her to pieces.
They turn it inside out trying to make this out to be, like, a real humanitarian. There's no such thing.
Wait. There's no such thing as a humanitarian 1,000-pound bomb.
There is no such thing
as a humanitarian cruise missile.
So that whole UN doctrine is controversial anyway, and the reality
and God forbid, you know, this is one of those knock wood moments. If we were raining cruise missiles on every part of the globe where some strongman was refusing to give up power and abusing his people, and there was some degree of consistency, I'd say, well, you know, okay, you know, we're doing it in Libya because we're doing it in, oh, I don't know, here's a word, Zimbabwe.
Or Cote d'Ivoire.
Cote d'Ivoire. You know, there's all kinds of places around the world where strongman thugs are behaving like strongman thugs behave. But they're not being targeted with Tomahawk cruise missiles.
No, I mean, also, there's just so many things that can be papered over in this exercise that we like to do because the dollar is, like, crashing. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, there's just the housing market has taken another dip. The laws that were being passed in Wisconsin, I mean, okay, yeah, maybe that hasn't come into play, but the Michigan one is in force. I mean, the tide is still marching on, and we have Obama executing his fake Wilsonian-type war, which makes me feel ill. And now people didn't know that Wilson was the, you know, sort of founder of the internationalist. He was.
Right. The founder of making the world safe for democracy.
Right.
I mean, those are his words, right?
Except he threw in jail so many people was against it. I mean, Wilson, you know, he was a son of a bitch, racist, or he was a horror show. But nevertheless, that's neither here nor there. But, you know, that's a tradition that people like Obama will follow and say that it's okay, and that, that Susan Rice. I tell you, one of the funniest people I follow on Twitter is that Jeremy Scahill. Good Lord.
Yeah.
That fool is funny. He said, has anyone figured out why Susan Rice was yelling during her speech? And it's like, that's what I told you about her. Watch her. Something's wrong.
Well, you know, I used, and I got to give you credit so everybody can hear me do it. I used the phrase cruise missile liberal around Malloy this past weekend. And I thought he was going to hurt something laughing.
Oh, good. Yes, I'm glad that one's getting around. Yes, I know. Every time I tell someone that one, they have to step back and think, and they start laughing because it's like, first of all, you're thinking, oh, what? That don't make no sense until you sit and think and you look at the people who it's applied to, and they just make your case. She's like the poster child for it, that one. I mean, she's so excited. I've been following her more lately because she's so excited.
She's so excited.
I'm just like, lady, calm down. And she's hella smart. You know, she's brilliant. She's
yeah.
She's one of them types. But they're really scary, those IR freaks. I'm starting to like the realists a bit better. The sort of internationalists, those people are doing my head in because they will make war and twist and turn, but it's always the same thing. You know, bombing people into democracy. I don't know what else to call it, you know.
I love you so much, I'm willing to kill every last one of you.
It's so bizarre. You know, anyway, listen, I don't know if you saw, I didn't realize it was just continual open season on black people, the thing in Miami. Did you hear about that?
No, what?
Well, the chief of police is under fire. I'm like, oh, okay. And sure enough, 8 black men been shot to death in the last 8 months, and people are, like, starting to have a few questions. I'm like, oh, shit. So it's interesting because all the police who shot the 8 black men, they were all Latinos.
Ooh.
So it's just like a real sort of, you know, anyway, he looks like he may lose his...
Having a bad day?
Yeah, but, you know, Florida is just sounding like a real hellhole, like we thought it would be. And it's just...
Well, Florida is an armed camp. I mean, do you remember, Sandra, when the right wing had a sure enough hissy fit because Disney said, we don't care about your stupid little law about open carry and being scared of it. No, you can't bring a gun to Disney.
Oh, I didn't know that. I missed that. Oh, Disney, were they laying down a law, huh?
Yeah. And the right wing, well, Disney clearly doesn't, you know, well, you know, what do you want out of Disney? You know, they allow gay people to have gay days at Disney.
Well, but that's also a corporation, you know, exercising their power. No questions on that one, though, huh?
Right, right.
Well,
and, you know, there was a Supreme Court decision today that sort of pulled, well, it was surprising, really, but not if you take a hard look at it. I can't remember the style of the case, but it was a suit over some sort of like a sinus medicine, nasal spray drug or something.
Zyrtec. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and it caused people to lose their sense of smell.
Yeah, no, it's horrible.
And so at the same time that profits were ramping up for the company, they were hiding information from their shareholders that, you know, the was about to hit the fan.
Right, and so, yeah, but the Supreme Court lately has been coming up with some really interesting rulings. I'm still reeling from the, oh, sorry, banks. No, we need to see that shit. You know, they said, no, we're not going to...
Well, and this was kind of in that vein because they the corporation marched proudly into the Supreme Court and said,
yeah.
Well, hell no, throw them out, Judge. They got the shareholders. They can't sue us.
Yeah, no, that's...
And the Supreme Court said, oh, yeah, they can. And I found it interesting, Sandra, because what that amounts to is the Supreme Court saying, your shareholders have a lot of money. Therefore, your shareholders are more important to the economy than you are, especially since you've more or less gone bust since this happened. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, they're still protecting the money.
Oh, no, it's always going to be protecting the money, but the money can sort of obviously take different manifestations, and maybe the Supreme Court is going less monopolistic for this season. I mean, who knows? They might be back to the monopolies next season. And speaking of monopolies, Are we going to have one giant internet phone company? I mean, I can't even believe the T-Mobile AT&T thing. It's like, wow.
Yeah, so even, yeah, that, yeah, if that merger goes through, all it means is that even more people can have really crappy service.
Oh, no, and, you know, if I'm going to go mercenary on it, you know, maybe I should need to go up here and buy me a few hundred, you know, hundred shares of Metro, because I ain't going to try to buy up that shit, split it, you know, maybe I can make a few bobs.
Amen, amen to that. And see, that goes back to the hoops I had to jump through to send the video of the video stream of what I did over the weekend in D.C.
Well, what happened with that?
Well, technically speaking, we have two phones that we use here for the horn. We have an iPhone. I know, I feel real icky about it. I feel like I own some portion of some 12-year-old's liver.
Well, no, but you're going to be feeling bad when maybe AT&T and Apple, maybe that's going to be a merger to happen down the road. Listen, I'm scared. Anyway,
yeah, no kidding. And then I've got of all the, you know, they're all corporations and they're all awful. But we've got a Sprint phone too.
Well, Sprint's not too happy about this merger.
No, and I'm on Sprint's side in this one.
Oh my God, you know, it's like watching the giant corporations battle, you know. And pity it's not a popcorn moment because it's really scary. But that's what's going on. Anyway, I'm sorry.
But because AT&T are such... Okay, this is my third use of the word tonight, and this is the one where I'm not using it as they are actually. AT&T are such nasty little bandwidth Nazis about how much data your iPhone uses that they will skull crack on you and drop an extra $10 on you, extra $10, extra $10. So what I did is I turned on the Wi-Fi to the iPhone, and then I turned on the mobile hotspot to the Sprint phone, so that because AT&T's 3G service sucks with to the Wi-Fi portion of the iPhone, and that way I was able to send consistently for a fairly decent amount of time, whereas just trying to use AT&T's crappy 3G drop out, which made me feel real stupid.
Well, the thing is, people need, I mean, you know, it's like they don't know nothing about the U.S. government. They don't seem to know anything about big market economics, along with the liberals, which is to their detriment, that we don't understand finance better, because we are getting so fucked over.
Hosed,
mergers,
yeah.
And these, and the fact that the U.S. government seems to have forgot what antitrust is. I don't understand it.
Well, and that's the whole thing. You know, I saw someone comment on the AT&T T-Mobile thing earlier today, and they said, you know, there's no way that the government will let them get away with this. And I thought, you silly child.
Well, but it is a question that should be asked. I mean, at least they're asking the right questions, because there should be some point where these mergers are being challenged, and they're not being challenged anywhere, which also supports the "this is an empire and that's all it is" argument too, because economic interests can do what the hell they want. Remember in Rome, I forget the name, starts with an L, the huge plantations that they had?
Oh, the Latifundia?
Latifundia. So, well, you know, we still can go roaming on this all night long.
Right, because right? Those of us who are not sheep simply to be slaughtered are sheep left to be sheared. And you know, we want our cell phone internet, and we want it, and we want our iPhones, and you know, look, I hate to say this, but the other reason I did things the way I did is my the Android phone, the Sprint phone, was utterly useless to me as a camera, because you just couldn't see the screen in that broad daylight.
Well, no, but... And I could still
see the iPhone screen, so there's that.
Well, this is horrible to say, but I bet even in Japan, that the state of it in, they still have better internet service than we do. I'm sorry to say that, but it's just to make a point that these monopolies are so bad for the consumer. The service that you get here is crap. And like I said to you a while ago, I said, well, the two-tier internet that they're trying to shove up on us is they know they have faster service, but they keep us with this slow shit, and then they introduce this faster stuff to make us pay when it's just one giant corporation. I mean, I realize I'm being, you know, it's a bit hyperbolic, and I agree. I do that because...
I don't think it is. I mean, I think that's the natural progression of where this is going. It's like the guy who said, well, I can't imagine that the government will let him get away with this merger. Well, you know, the government wouldn't if the Sherman... The government wouldn't if, A, the American people didn't think the Sherman Act had something to do with an animated little boy and his dog, you know, and Mr. Peabody, and, B, the Sherman Act wouldn't let him get away with it if the Sherman Act was nothing more than a hollow shell of itself in the modern empire-slash-fascistic scheme of things.
Well, and like the Constitution is just really becoming a piece of paper, too. So, you know, it's like the laws. The laws are not laws in this country anymore, and I think we can trace that back to the lack of prosecution of government officials and bad corporate actors. So you have a country of men. You know? I just think that's the basis of the whole problem. I mean, the other thing I want to mention is that once again we have some corporate managing a disaster. The Japanese thing, oh, yeah, everything's okay, and then the radiation is showing up everywhere. Have you noticed that trend? Telling us everything's okay, but now...
Yeah, don't eat the vegetables.
And vegetables and milk, and there's radiation in Reykjavik now and Finland. I'm like, hello? But we're being told...
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Listen, I don't know. I'm just kind of like... TEPCO, another thing is that their stock has recovered. Like, it went up 17%, so... You know, I'm real confused.
Oh, and hey, I gotta just share this with you because the irony is too good not to. The minute you and I started talking about internet and bandwidth and things like that,
yeah.
Guess what happened here?
Some problem?
Yeah, the stream that I send up to Ben's servers at White Rose, this is my end. This isn't Ben. This is my end. It buffered up and shut down.
Not
the first time that's happened. It would make a fella just a little bit paranoid. In fact, Reverbo just wrote in and said, coincidental cutoff, your stream with Sandra was just cut right when you were about to describe how you arranged, read pimped, how you set up your feeds from the weekend, so the listeners didn't hear how you did it. Then you came back on, coincidentally, about 45 seconds later. No, really, signed Reverbo.
Oh, my God, that's scary.
Yeah, Susan, News Ninja Susan said, I don't think AT&T liked being called bandwidth Nazis.
Oh, no. Well, listen, and continuing with the media hell, I got this sort of email saying, oh, you know, because I'm one of the people who look at the New York Times all the damn time, I guess I got this unlimited access for the rest of the year, right? sponsored by Lincoln. It's like a service. So I read they gave like 200,000 of them out. So I said, hell yeah, and so I get the free service. But this is the problem with that. Wouldn't you want to give the free service to people who don't use it that much? Because people like me, if they didn't know me, I'm broke, I won't be doing it, but people like me would be buying their service, you know what I mean? So I don't understand what they're doing.
Well, that's because they don't understand what they're doing,
okay,
Sandra.
Right. Yeah, that's the point.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be hiding their newspaper behind a paywall in the first place.
Oh, well, it's absurd because it's $180 a year. I'm like, that ain't gonna work. I don't know.
Well, but wait. How much is a dead tree subscription to the New York Times?
I'm not too sure. You know, I don't know.
It may be close enough that they're actually trying to get people to take the dead tree subscription. Because that's where they're hemorrhaging.
Well, I understand, but it's just the problem with the whole paywall thing, though, is that, I mean, you know, if people don't want to pay, they can just sort of not choose that source. But the problem with that, though, is if you keep doing that and you have First Amendment protection and we live in a democracy, well, that becomes problematic because people can't get the information. Now, you know, I'm being in a fantasy world because I know people don't give a F anyway. But just look at it. It's sort of like the newspaper, you know, you can look at it. It was pretty much free, and it was an advertising model. But, you know, how is a democracy supposed to function if you don't have information that's accessible?
Well, I think the answer to that is fairly easy. You ain't supposed to.
Empire?
Empires don't want functioning democracies. The one is antithetical and anathematic to the other.
Yeah, well, if I don't care.
I'm so simple, Sandra. I'm sitting here, I watch my email during the show and stuff, and I just got one of these celebrity blast emails.
Yeah.
And the subject line says, "Extra, Chris Brown still set to perform on DWTS." And I'm so out of it, the only thing I can think of for DWTS is Down with Tavis Smiley.
Chris Brown? You mean that batterer?
Yeah, no, at DWTS is apparently Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, no, but Chris Brown, is that the one who he wanted to beat the hell out of Rihanna?
Right.
Oh, shit. He is the wrong color, otherwise he would have got the Charlie Sheen treatment.
Oh, well, there was a Charlie Sheen sighting last night, too, and I hate myself that I even know it. But that's what I get for turning on the television in the morning.
Tripoli?
No, oddly enough, no. Almost as bad on Jimmy Kimmel. And kiss Jimmy Kimmel right on the mouth.
Oh, well.
I'm sure that several right-wing fundamentalist marriages have dissolved as a result.
I
can't let you go before we do this. Remember Victoria Jackson?
What? Yes. Well, yeah.
Showed up on the ukulele playing her ukulele about that communist Obama.
Yeah, no, that was so weird.
She's
why?
All okay. So she's all fundamentalist, right? And that means she despises gay people.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, one of these stupid entertainment shows. It was Showbiz Tonight on Headline News. So she shows up with her Bible on there because she apparently... Okay, this is another one of those moments we have, Sandra. I have to know that there's a television program that exists called Glee because I have teenagers in my home.
Well, yeah, I'm about to say, I mean, I've been trying to shield the nieces from that because I can't deal.
It's a losing battle.
No,
okay, so it was bad enough as far as the right wing was concerned that they had an openly gay character, and of course all these roles are played by consenting adults. There's no teenagers in the cast, right? It's the oldest looking teenagers I've ever seen.
Right.
Right. And so there's an openly gay character in the Glee cast. Well, they crossed the line. They crossed the line because, oh my God, two of the guys in Glee done kissed each other on the TV. Well, I mean, they kissed each other on the mouth. Who am I kidding? But I've got to share the hissy with you because we just got to. Okay, can you hang for this?
Yeah, no, that's fine. No problem, yeah.
Okay, so this is from Headline News.
Glee gay kiss outrage. There's a brand new debate raging over that kiss on Glee between two of the show's leading teen characters.
Yeah, and Brooke, some say it's a great way to let kids know it's okay to be gay. But today, former Saturday Night Live star Victoria Jackson is generating big outrage over what she just blogged about the kiss. She called it sickening.
And Victoria Jackson is with us today in Atlanta for an exclusive Showbiz Tonight Newsmaker interview, speaking out and defending what she wrote. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
All right, first I want to take a look at what you wrote in your column for the website WorldNet Daily about the kiss and the show. Here it is. Did you see Glee this week? Sickening. And besides shoving the gay thing down our throats, they...
Why can't they talk about gayness without talking about things being shoved down their throats?
What is the mute thing?
I know. That's... I don't know. Somebody screwed up in the control room. I think that was their bombing Libya music.
Well, the production value, goddamn, I think I could do better anyway.
Made a mockery of Christians again. I wonder what their agenda is. Hey, producers of Glee, what's your agenda? One-way tolerance? And Victoria, you previously wrote about gay marriage, men and gay relationships in the article. You said, I don't care what is politically correct. Everyone knows that two men on a wedding cake is a comedy skit, not an alternate lifestyle. There, I said it. Ridiculous. Victoria, I want to get to your response to how people are responding today, but first let's take a look at the kiss in question on Glee last week between the characters Kurt and Blaine. Here it is.
Oh, wait. So this is the dancing about architecture part where I tell you what's on the video.
Okay.
Okay, so they've got it split screen. The bigger of the two screens is the clip from Glee, in which these two, in, you know, and I say this as a straight guy, these two really pretty young guys are, you know, they're kissing, and it's a Jim Dandy. And so in the little box to the right, they've got Victoria Jackson holding her face, her hand up above her face, and wincing. It's beautiful. Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
And the font underneath says, Glee Kiss Outrage. New today, former SNL star Victoria Jackson blasts Glee. Showbiz Tonight exclusive. And you want to know why Americans fail that civics test? I should probably get hate mail for even running this, but it's too funny not to. And it's not fun. It's not just funny, Sandra. It's pathetic.
Well, no, but it is. It's just like, it's so not news. I'm like, Glee. Glee has that, you know, number one L-word dyke on there. I mean, please, the whole thing is just terminated with them.
Right, and that's kind of the whole point. And, you know, the music is cool, and, you know, their rendition of Bohemian Rhapsody was one for the ages, and they, you know, they did it. The other day I saw the rendition they did of, and it was an extraordinary rendition, I have to tell you, of Teenage Dream by the Hoosier Face. Okay, maybe I can be saved because I can't remember her name.
Oh, no, yeah, because I am, like, in
dark,
awe.
No, dark-haired, beautiful girl, used to be a fundie now, she's much prettier than Lady Gaga. But anyway, so let's get to Victoria Jackson because this is where the fun starts.
You move me, Kurt. And this duet would just be an excuse to spend more time with you.
Okay, so that's the dialogue in front of the kiss. And that's the heavy breathing. And that's the smooch.
Victoria, I've been reading the responses today on websites all over, and basically, you are being accused of being homophobic. How do you respond to that?
Well, it doesn't matter what I think. What matters is what the Bible says.
She brought her Bible.
And I'm really concerned about our country because...
Because our country's in the Bible, right? God.
Immorality is, well, the, let's see, secular humanism rules the airwaves, and it's stealing the innocence away from this whole generation of children. My daughter's a teenager, and I can't find any show that she can watch.
So you don't believe you're homophobic. You just believe
That's a cute little buzzword of the liberal agenda. Basically, the...
I like how the reporter is talking to her real slow, like she's an idiot.
Now, Victoria, first we're going to put on our left sock.
Well, she needs to put some bass in her voice. God, what a horrible voice.
Well, that's and see, that's not her real voice. That's the bimbo voice that she uses when she's performing. That's what she made a shtick out of while she was being very, very bad on Saturday Night Live. You know, anybody who remembers Toonsis the cat remembers how awful Victoria Jackson was. She's going to read to us from the Bible, Sandra.
Oh.
The Bible says homosexuality is a sin, but it has also gossip is listed in the same paragraph as an equal sin. And the reason the Bible tells us what is a sin is to point us to the Savior and show us we need one. Jesus Christ. And I have noticed that...
Yeah, that's what I say, too. Jesus Christ.
Oh, dear God. Or, you know, Christ on the cross in her case. Good night.
Yeah, by the way, it's Katy Perry that I couldn't remember.
Okay. Yeah.
Half of the entire Horn audience has just reminded me it's Katy Perry. By the way, they're all guys.
Listen, I don't even know. I don't know that... Yeah, it's too much. But I have to say that the right wing is having they're so schizophrenic about Obama. He's really putting it to him with this Libya thing. And by the way, Odyssey Dawn, the name. Odyssey. And they might want another.
You know why? You know, these things are randomly generated. And my personal thought on Odyssey Dawn when I first heard it, Sandra, was that the first O word that came up was Orlando Dawn.
Well, it's just kind of, it's really cheesy and creepy. But even more disturbing was that, did you read that email I sent to you that from the White House?
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, they might want to walk that back, too, talking about installing anybody. I'm like, what? I thought we were just, you know, saving some people from being slaughtered.
No, that's the thing. They don't, no messaging, no end game, no strategy. It's just, you know, let's just go. And the for-profit media plays right along, Sandra, because what do we get? We get those nighttime shots of U.S. warships somewhere with Tomahawk missiles going up in the air as if it was the 4th of July and their bottle rockets.
No, I know. I was really creeped out when I saw that on the front page. I thought, oh, no, not again. It's just like every few minutes, all the time we get these images now. It's like, and the war in Eurasia goes on. I mean, it really is. Orwell must be just spinning because everything's coming through.
And by the way, Jim has now given us a new name for Victoria Jackson. She is just a helium-breathing homophobe.
Helium, yes, that's a good one. Thank you, Jim. Oh, dear God, yeah.
And I'm told, by the way, by Robert down in Australia, he says, gay kiss, big deal. So what? We've had gay characters kissing on screen in Australia since the 70s. And has anyone in the USA seen the UK sci-fi series Torchwood? The main character is hypersexual. He says, your country is getting truly weird, Bob.
Yeah,
you know, when a guy from the country that has a platypus in it tells me my country is weird, I know we're in trouble.
No, and this is all to do about nothing, what goes on here, and it's just sort of elevated.
Right, but you know what? You need gay kiss controversies in an empire, Sandra.
Yeah, I guess that should be just the theme. I think that's the theme for the week.
Empire? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because
what gets scary? We've spent so much time wandering around ancient Rome, we tend to forget that there was an ancient Rome that lasted beyond 476 of the current era, and we tend to call it the Byzantine Empire.
Mm.
You want to see some real fun stuff shake out that'll make you think, oh well, no, that there we are. Just get yourself a good book on Byzantine history.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Okay, listen, I gotta.
All right, you roll. Thanks so much, Sandra. Have a great night.
You too.
All right, bye. Oh, Odyssey Dawn. Odyssey. Oh, David in Tennessee. Odyssey Dawn? Hmm? Oh, now I remember. I gave her a folded fiver to see Pink one time in Cleveland in 1983. Jesus. She sounds like one of those. Did you see the pole dancing for Jesus story? Out of Texas? No, really. Pole dancing for Jesus. And I'll bet you one of the pole dancers for Jesus' name is Odyssey Dawn. God. Somebody in the Pentagon found the old rubric about how to come up with a drag queen name. Jesus. It's embarrassing. You know, it just gets embarrassing after a while. Let's see. Onward. I think. Maybe not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening.
Hey, David. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing. This will surprise you. And this has not been rehearsed, people. This has not been rehearsed. But,
just like the rest of the show.
Well, what's that?
Just like the rest of the show.
Yeah, just like the rest of the show, exactly. Spoil the sponsor. I ordered some meat from Binkert's.
Yes.
Very good. I recommend people check out Binkert's.
Binkert's.com. Binkerts.com.
You ruined it. I was gonna say it for you. I was gonna make you like, oh my God, he made a caller say it.
No. See, that's it's genetic. It's way down in my DNA.
I know. I just wanted to.
Well, what did you get? You got to tell me.
Okay, I got one Hungarian ring.
Isn't that yummy?
Yes, very, very good, very good. And I got one package of the footlongs. And what is it called? The Debonizer?
Oh, the Debretziner?
Yeah, the Debretzner. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, it's kind of like black pepper with a little cayenne and a whole bunch of caraway.
And the Holstein?
Oh, yeah.
And I think and then two packages of hot dogs. So, you know, I just did it easy this time, guys. I was just sampling. Like at the Nosh Market, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yo, you watched Tony Bourdain last night, didn't you?
Yes.
Did you want to go to the Nosh Market?
I did, actually. I did not get to go to the Nosh. I don't think if I did go, I was very, very small because I did visit Austria when I was because I lived in Europe for 4 years. So.
Oh, Jesus, the Schnitzel Cordon Bleu.
Oh, that was amazing.
I don't think I've ever seen a bigger, a more perfect example of food porn on that program ever.
That
thing was the size of a football.
Oh, I mean that made me. I was going to ask my mom when I was over there. I was like, you have to make that, or you have to attempt to make that. But the other plug that I wanted to mention, and this is a good one, mark this day on your calendar because it's more important than Odyssey Dawn. May 8th, 2011. That's the return of Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
No.
Season.
Oh, I am marking. You think I won't. I am marking that on my calendar.
That's what you need to do. And, you know, the first thing that made me think of Odyssey Dawn was was Red Dawn, and since I just transitioned to Red Dawn, let me mention this.
Oh, wait, before you mention it, I have Wolverines! Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, what a piece of crap that film is going to be. That's going to beat out the Ayn Rand crap fest. Did you hear what they changed the enemy to be? Because they didn't want to piss off China again.
No, I'm just so dumbstruck by the fact that somebody thought it would be a good idea to remake it.
And I don't even know how they're going to make this work, but I just, oh my God, I don't even want to see the casting or any of it. I just want to see the trailer and then say, that's it. That's all I need to see. Is North Korea is the enemy now.
Oh, no. No. Well, I guess what? They replaced Cuba?
No, they replaced China. I think you know what it was. Is the Hollywood was we're gonna get so stereotyped as being racist and prejudiced. We better change it to North Korea. Yeah, that's better, guys. That is so far fetched. You know what they should have done? What they should have done is they should actually, when they make the Red Dawn remake, is they should actually, how about fundamentalists invading their town? That would be more.
Well, didn't they just do that movie though?
Oh, Red State.
Yeah.
Hey, well, you know, it's obvious why they didn't do that. I mean, they just want to do this xenophobe type of maneuver. But the other thing I wanted to mention, the news story that, since you were talking about gay issues, and I think it's important, this couple just won their rights to stay together, and I guess one of the partners is not going to be sent back to Mexico.
You know, it's Argentina, and Sandra just sent that to me, too. A New York woman who immigrated from Argentina scored a court victory Tuesday with her wife in their efforts to halt a deportation proceeding. Government lawyers have agreed not to deport Monica Alcota, a citizen of Argentina, while her wife, Christina Ojeda, proceeds with a green card petition on her behalf. Hot dog. Now that's New York. If it was Alabama, they'd just go the extra mile and burn a cross in their yards.
Right. Well, since time is running out, I was just calling in to mention the Binkerts. So everybody go to Binkerts, Binkerts.com. I didn't want to make you say it again because sometimes the caller has to say it.
That's true, and it does help.
So Binkerts, I'll say it one more time, Binkerts.com, I give it the thumbs up, and...
I got to throw something in. They sell these jars of classic German mustard.
I thought about getting one, but I was just like...
Well, some go with some, and some goes with other. For instance, the spicy hot yellow mustard goes great with the Debretzner and the, whereas the sweet goes with stuff like the Weisswurst, which is just... silly, good, yummy.
Well, one last thing before I go, because I think you're not entitled to it, but I'm going to give you the endorsement for it. yes, Bob deserves some more promo samples because he got me to shop. So if you're listening, Binkertz, hook him up. That's all I got for
Yeah, because we're almost out here. Yeah, next, yeah, and God knows what kind of ecstasy you'll be in when your box of Bubble Genius arrives.
I'll tell you what. I'll open a challenge to Binkertz. You guys hook him up with another more free samples. You'll be sure to get a return customer. Not that that's not going to happen anyways. But you know.
Yeah. Right. And just saying. Right.
Yeah. Oh, but by the way, I do have a story for tomorrow. You're not going to believe it, Bob. You're just not going to believe it. It has to do with Steely Dan. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, cool. Now, you certainly whetted my curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, oh, no, you're lying. But I just...
Oh, goody, I love those.
Yeah.
All right. Take it easy, David. Bye now. David's not the only one. I got a question in an email the other day asking me what Binkertz products I recommend. And that's like... That was really difficult because there's so many and they're all so good. I'm a particular fan also of the Landjäger. It's like a Germano-Austrian version of a beef stick, and it's portable for like hiking and stuff. And God, it's good. You can taste like the wine and oh man, yeah. Binkerts.com. Just good. And yeah, don't forget if you order from Bubble Genius, bubblegenius.com. And you decide to clean your body in a non-corporate fashion with vegan-friendly soaps. And in the promo code box, you put Horny, H-O-R-N-I-E. You will not only get 10% off your order, you'll get a bar of the Horn soap. Won't that be cool? Just say it. So it's time to get out of here. Awfully glad to be back behind the microphone this evening. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go. Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Reverbo, by the way, is our op-ed columnist, and we'll get back to his op-ed columnizing. He's been flying around the country on the Silver Pelican, you know, his personal airship. But he'll be back at it. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, a cavalcade of crazy. Thanks for the one-liner to Dave in Tennessee. I really appreciate that. Girl in Cleveland in 1983. Odyssey Dawn. Oh, God, I love that. We've got military operations that sound like strippers. It's a beautiful thing. Thanks, of course, always go out to our... and I got to tell you this. Because we're right at the end. Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent, is pursuing once again a scholarship to Netroots Nation. If you go to Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, you will have the opportunity to vote for Matt. He needs your votes. Number one is like 900 votes, and Matt is approaching 200 or more. It would be awfully fun if you would spread the word around and help Matt get a scholarship to Netroots Nation in Minneapolis this summer. Just go to osborneinc.com, and I'm sure you will be directed to where you need to go. It's through Democracy for America. It's no pain in the butt or anything. It's a little registration. They won't torment you or anything. Go and vote for Matt Osborne, please. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They are a continuing reason why this program stays on the air. Without you and without them, there would be no Horn. And thanks to all of you who provide your support. Five slots in the 100 that we need between now and the end of March were kindly contributed by a listener this evening, and thank you very much. I think she knows who she is, and we do appreciate it. We need all the help we can get because, hey, 3 months in the black, devoutly to be wished, you know? And always, 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 Gina... Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, live from behind the Scrapple Curtain in Pennsylvania. Stay tuned. Bad wood underneath the snare.